Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Right on the Hoover that one!
Yuckity yuck, McMannequin.
The British Bulldog is part of the new generation!
You may all bow before D-Mabel!
Here comes the jackknife!
On lives the new generation! And the World Wrestling Federation!
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review as the other Cultaholic lads get braced for a Saudi Arabia Elimination Chamber. We are here via the Ica Pro Powered DeLorean in a chamber that simply will not eliminate. Don't know either. Who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell, with the mulligan to my O'Hare from Cultaholic.com, Jack Atkins. Jackins, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right. You're very soft-spoken today.
Yeah,
like,
well,
Bobby Lashley.
I was listening back to our last episode, the Survivor Series, where I'd had about 2 hours sleep and I was eating an Easter egg, and I just sound absolutely bollocks on it, so... I'd apologise, but, you know, it's free. So
fuck off, it's free if you're annoyed by it. I thought you sounded great. I love the fact that half an hour of it is us seeing if we can figure out every WWE champion of all time.
That's just the bit where I got up to on my commute this morning. I was like, fucking yeah, go for it, yeah.
It was a roller coaster, that Survivor Series watch along.
Christ, it was.
I enjoyed listening back to it whilst the bit where I talked about all the plans I had for my birthday day while sat on the sofa with my leg in the air.
Good birthday.
Great birthday. Great night before. By now, you might have heard me talk about this on the Nitro review and a little bit on the SmackDown review, but in case you only listen to this, I admire how niche your support is, and thank you. We did the Cultaholic live show on Sunday, and Adam said, you fancy a pint? Well, yeah, I'm up for a pint. Why not? It's my birthday, so I'll have a pint. And we go to this pub around the corner, and there's everybody from work
and my
good lady. They'd organised a little surprise, little thing, which is sweet. Well, not everybody, because, you know, you were greatly missed.
Yes.
And that's all right.
That's because,
one,
I don't like Tom, and two, I'm too cool.
I mean, both perfectly good reasons.
Both lies as well.
Well.
Alex pulled it out of the bag, but it was very last minute, and we had a table booked in South Shields.
That's fine. You know your loyalty's like, that's absolutely fine. No. And again, another reason about the evening. So there are people from work, lovely time. There was champagne because we're posh, and then there was beers, and then we went from one pub to another, and then it kind of filtered down to me. What a triple threat this is. Me, Jack, and Dick Tubbs.
Wow.
Big Dick Tubbs. Us three. That was the final three. The final three in the match. And we went to a pub which a lovely pub, a flight of stairs, and we came to leave. So it was the last drink of the night. All had gone well. I'm a little bit worse for wear, like... Too much, you know, drink responsibly.
Yeah.
It's the last drink of the night. We're going home. And I just stack it down the stairs of this place. I hit the ground. Like Jack and Tubbs have walked ahead of me and I'm behind them. And I've just gone poof, down a flight of stairs. And I'd kind of laugh it off. And Jack's like, are you all right? I said, yeah, fine. Well, I'm fine, not bothered. And I went home. Didn't think any more of it. Because, again, the one benefit to drinking excessively, and that you should never drink to excess,
yeah, straight edge boy here will tell you this, is that your body won't tell you when you're in pain, when you've had too much to drink. So I walked home. I don't know how, compared to, like, considering the next day I woke up in agony.
Yeah.
Just agony. I'd gone into the spare room because Alex was working early. So I thought, I don't want to wake her up with me just, like, drunkenly staggering into bed. So I went to the spare room and... as I woke up just in pain and there's blood everywhere, I was like, oh, that's not normal. And then, and I just completely obliterated, like, my kneecap and my leg. Yeah. And there's cuts on my chest somehow and on my abdomen. And it feels bruised. There isn't really any bruises per se, but it feels bruised all up here on my left arm and all up my left shoulder.
Yeah.
And I felt bad because, like, Alex had she does a wonderful little birthday thing every year where she will start my day bringing me in a Greg's steak bake with a candle in it. Singing me happy birthday.
That's lovely.
So I start every birthday. And I always take a picture of it. And I go, lovely. But I think because I was quite hungover and in a lot of pain, I just blew the candle out. And she's going, are you all right? There's blood everywhere. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm just eating this thing quite sad. She didn't even take a picture. Oh, no. You can be okay today. What are you going to do? I don't think I'd like to go out. I might go out into town. And as I was getting out of bed... No, I'm not. I've walked to the other end of the home. I'm like, nah, this is pain.
Oh, shit.
I don't think I'm doing anything today. So, and I did nothing. I watched OSW Review I didn't get any food. I think I just drank water. Just felt very sorry for myself on my birthday. But the day before, it was very magical. Alex had planned for the day itself a surprise in the evening, a little surprise thing in the evening. So I was told, be ready for 6 o'clock.
Mm.
And I was banged up. I was like, Alex has gone to some trouble. I'll have a bath. I'll clean up. I'll take some pain medication and we'll be fine. And Alex came home and she just said, I just feel really under the weather today. It's not COVID, luckily. She's fine. She said, I just feel really rotten today. I don't know what it is. And I said, look, like, this thing you've got planned, like, is it movable? And she went, yeah, but it's your birthday, so we're not going to move it. I said, well, look, you're not well. I'm knackered. Shall we just draw a line under today? Let's do it tomorrow. So at time recording, we're doing it tonight. Mm. By now, in time you've heard it, it's happened, and I'm sure it was lovely. So that was my birthday. We instead ordered Turtle Bay and watched Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, fucking A.
It's a good birthday.
Yeah.
It was a good birthday. I cannot complain. I had a lovely time.
See, the question I have is, what would have been worse, waking up with blood in the bed or shit? Because we're that age now.
both terrifying. It was a good time. I'm 38 now.
That's all right.
It is all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is all right. Cultaholicshop.com. Where's the pain in business? The pain is you're running out of socks. For quiet nights of onanism. Blart Socks will sort that for you. Surprise your friends, amuse your enemies. Blart Socks from coldholicshop.com, along with Ross and Andrew, wrestling buddies, available now.
Well, we say it's Andrew, but, you know.
It does. Now, this is the great thing, is it kind of doubles as a Jackins as well.
And if you colour in the glasses and give it a little fringe, it's Dick Tubbs as well. So
it's Richard Tubbs too.
Three in one.
Look at that. You get all the figures sorted. We don't want to do them out of you of making the Jackins figure eventually.
So, oh, yeah.
I think it'd be an easy one to do. Just a redesign. If you were a SmackDown, if you were a No Mercy player, you would just be like, you and Andrew would just be different skins.
Yeah.
Different. You press right C to get to Jackins and Andrew.
I did that the other month. I booted up. I think it was No Mercy before it fucking wiped again, because No Mercy's not the best N64 game. It is WCW Revenge, and that is not playable. But I think it was No Mercy, and I was like, I'm going to make Matt and Nick Jackson. I thought, well, no point making two slots. I'll just make him one, two, three, four.
Jobs are good.
Covers all your bases.
I like the fact that No Mercy's so lo-fi that it doesn't carry the anxiety-riddled stress of creating a character in, like, 2K19.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't do it. I've tried, and I've just gone, nah, I'll just let other people make it.
Exactly, and that's what I always liked was, you know, making people see and if you could tweak it. And because everyone's on the same playing field, You're just like, yeah, that looks like Kenta Kobashi punching meat in the face on WrestleMania 2000. Yeah, of course.
It certainly is now.
Yeah, well, now it looks like, you know, oh, Seth Rollins versus a child's drawing. It's like,
yeah. A child's memory of Seth Rollins. But yeah, so we are here to go back in time to when we were children.
Yeah, we are, yeah.
The reason why we're here, aren't we?
About that.
We do
every
forget.
Week,
yeah. We do forget sometimes. That's why we're here. We're going back to Monday Night Raw from November the 30th, 1995. It is the night after Survivor Series 95. Very much as we said during the watch along, the bit where we weren't just going through all the reigns of WWE champions, it feels kind of like the new generation era is coming to an end.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
It really does feel like the end of an era. And like I said the other week, there's a bit of sadness that comes with that. A little bit of sadness.
There is. I mean, I've only tasted just the very end of the new gen era. But
I have sucked on the teat.
Yes.
For a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and a good friend left the table because they were so unhappy with the with the quality. Justin Henry. He's not dead. He's just doesn't do the podcast anymore.
You know, he's got sense. He was just like, I don't want to do any more Bob Sparkplug fucking Holly matches.
We might not be doing them for much longer. But more on that in a little bit. So we are going to be looking at Monday Night Raw the night after Survivor Series 1995. In a moment, Jatkins is going to tell us what's happening in the wrestling world in this particular week. In the real world, number one in the UK charts, Robson and Jerome still smashing it with, I believe, Slash up on the roof.
God.
Mariah Carey still smashing it in the US charts with Fantasy. This is the last week of that song being number one. The streak ends next week.
Oh, shit.
Find out who takes the title soon.
Brock Lesnar.
Oh, yeah. It's always Lesnar, isn't it? It's always fucking Lesnar. To Wong Fu, thanks for everything. Julie Newmar, number one in the UK box office.
Okay.
That is now on Amazon Video, should you wish to see it.
It's been a long time since I watched that. I think it was on BBC Two late at night.
Mm.
I can't really remember much about it.
Just popped up once. Yeah, I feel like I think Patrick Swayze's in it.
It's Swayze.
Yes.
Is it Wesley Snipes and John Leguizamo? I think that's
a heck of a lineup.
It's a triple header, yeah.
That is a real triple header.
Yeah.
And number one in the US box office, a brand new number one in the US box office, it's GoldenEye. Ooh. I am Tina Turner. It has broken Clear and Present Danger's record for the highest weekend debut for a spy film. Over $20 million grossed by Pierce Brosnan's first outing as 007.
Well, I mean, what a great time. What a great time.
And it was spawned one of the best N64 games ever.
Have you tried playing it since, though?
No.
It's because obviously the FPS genre just blew up completely in the 2000s. Going back to GoldenEye feels very rudimentary, but it's not like going back to like Doom or Duke Nukem where you're just like, oh yeah, sound. Because you remember, like, how that looks is how you remember it looking. Going back to GoldenEye, it's like being like, oh, okay, this didn't look like this. Dr. Doak hasn't even got a face. What's going on? Still
doesn't age particularly well, no, then.
But leave the memories alone.
Absolutely. In the video game world, though, this week, Donkey Kong Country 2 Diddy's Conquest comes out.
There we go.
So we talked about this last week, and it was Rare putting it was a younger Rare team than the ones that put together Donkey Kong Country 1. And they just came in with wild and wacky ideas, like doing a Donkey Kong Country game without Donkey Kong in.
Madness.
Like, whoa, you were sure about that? And they did, and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And it improves on Donkey Kong Country in pretty much every single facet. Better graphics, better sound, a much richer, deeper gameplay.
Yeah.
One that doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed by it, but one that you can enjoy nipping back to levels and completing a little bit more of. Oh, I love Diddy's Conquest.
Is this,
it's such a fun game.
Is this the one where King K. rules a pirate rather than a king?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very swashbuckly adventure
in
this particular one, but it's great fun. And it's where I discovered that Cranky Kong in the Donkey Kong canon is the original Donkey Kong from the NES games. I was like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
What a great callback. Cranky Kong is the first Donkey Kong. And then Donkey Kong Jr. is the Donkey Kong in the SNES games.
Yeah.
I'd like to think someone's listening today and that has made their head erupt. So
and
you're welcome.
Let's not forget the best Kong of all.
Oh, go on.
Funky Kong. Shagger.
He is a shagger. He got quite a run out in the Donkey Kong animated series.
I've never seen it.
Oh, mate, it's something special. Matthew and I will quite often have evenings that will descend into discussing how the bizarreness that was the Donkey Kong Country animated series, where they went, we're going to use revolutionary CGI 3D technology to create this cartoon. Like, no other cartoon's going to look like this. It's going to feature a Nintendo IP. We'll make it musical. Okay. So, like, there's two or three songs in each episode which tell the story. They go, which made it musical? Okay, cool. I mean, and some of the songs are quite iconic, and they've since been remastered by fans of the series, and animation's been sweetened up and stuff like that. It's very cool.
Is this why, like, Donkey Kong 64 starts with the DK rap and stuff? Is it kind of like
I guess it must come from that, but again, like, it's a different style of music. Like, the DK rap is like it's rap music, but Donkey Kong Country, it's kind of very like poppy, soulful music.
What, like The Wiz starring Donkey Kong?
Yeah. Kind of like The Wiz. I don't know how big an Always Sunny fan you are.
I do. Like, it's been a few years since I watched it, but I've watched a good chunk of it. Like,
because I only started watching it like about 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
it kept coming up on like the thing. One day, Alex and I, we had the whole Saturday to ourselves, and we were stuck at home. So I said, "Look, let's just do that shuffle thing." And Always Sunny Series 1, Episode 1 started, and I went, "Do you know what? I keep seeing this. People talk. Let's just see what the crack is." And we watched it for 11 hours. And we just, every night now, we'll just dip in and watch a few more to get us up to speed. And we are up to the episode where they do their version of The Wiz.
Oh, Christ. Yeah.
It's, I just love how there's no real form or concern for a lot of structure.
No.
Like, they don't worry about having to tie the episode up at the end.
No, not at all.
Some episodes just end. And I love it. I love that it's not bound by anything. In some episodes, like, there's a musical episode randomly. There's one episode where it just follows Charlie for like a 30-minute spell.
Is Charlie's Charlie work.
Charlie Charlie's work. Yeah. Oh, my God, that's great.
Yeah.
It was about 5 minutes in before I realized this is one camera shot.
Yeah.
And it's just, this is, oh, my God. I love this.
The episode which is just them doing their own Lethal Weapon movie. Go suck an egg.
It's just great. All like it's and Danny DeVito is a revelation.
It's
there's one bit, like, it's like, for all the ridiculous, I will talk about Raw in a minute. There's one bit in one episode, and it's not even like a big piece, but it had me on the floor laughing. And it must have just caught me at the right time. And it was the one where they were running a singles bar. And they were, and you could go on and rate people, score them. And there's just one bit in that where Danny is in the office, like Frank's in the office with Charlie and with Mac, and they're talking through strategies of what to talk about with women, and it's just awful. It all sounds terrible. And Frank goes, "Look, we'll tell you what, I'll have this whistle. If it's going wrong, I'll blow it. We'll get away. Let's just keep it simple. We'll just start by telling them our names." And he just walks out and goes, "Hi, I'm Frack." Shit! I don't know why. It just creased me. It's just, Danny DeVito is just a star. He's so, oh my God, he's always been a star, but it was, I didn't realise how big a career renaissance Always Sunny was for Danny DeVito.
It's the fact that he just doesn't give a flying fuck. And everyone's like, yeah, Danny DeVito. And there's just one series, and it's unexplained, but in every single episode, there's a bit where Danny DeVito just pulls out a gun.
They were just flying away to go, "Well, I've got my piece with me." or like the episode where he's got sausages in his pocket. And he's just, and in the background, you just see him like trying to lean into his pocket and eat them. And again, like, just there. No, not a massive sequitur, just that it exists. It's a show that rewards you for paying attention.
Yeah,
and I'm all for it. I'm kind of sad that we're so close to being caught up to speed. Now, I think we're up to end of season 12. And I know season 15 comes out this week.
Okay.
So we're nearly up to speed.
I think I stopped watching about 11 or 12.
Oh, did you?
Just because life got in the way kind of thing. So I was just like, it wasn't that. I was just like, oh, this is poo now. Like, I've been with like other shows. I was just like, I know it's there. when I've got the time to jump back in. But
it continues to be great. Yeah. It really does. Princess Diana. Nice gear change. Princess Diana admitted this week in the news that she cheated on Prince Charles. Mm. There was a TV interview, a famous TV interview, where she revealed that she'd been playing away from Charles, and the country was there was the royalists in the country that were like, ah, she's a terrible human, blah, blah. But then there was this overwhelming majority was like, she's our princess, she's one of us.
Yeah,
good for you getting in there and fixing the system. And she just become iconic. Weirdly, like, she'd become iconic already, but something like this would just enhance her strangely. Yeah. Bit of royal scandal from this year in the UK. we always love a bit of royal scandal.
Oh, we love it.
We love it, scandal. Over to you for the ratings. But the quick, the wrestling news. I'll give you the ratings before we get there, though. Yeah. Last week, Raw did 2.6.
Yeah.
Nitro, 2.0.
Oh.
Big win for Raw last week.
For a go-home as well, though.
For a pre-taped go-home.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to remember with so many of these episodes, is that there are so many of them are pre-taped still, because WWE have said, we don't have the money to go live every week.
Yeah.
So we won't. So we'll just have to do what we can with what we do. And it's funny how some of these, it's almost as if it's just a better show.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
But you're the one who's watching both of them. How is Nitro at this point?
More often than not, I think the last one that we did, just, it's all very sort of slapdash.
Yeah.
A lot of it's very hurried, and they'll have segments and they'll build to segments that don't really do anything. Whereas Raw, you get more of what you're promised.
Yeah.
And even though what you're promised might not be something you're massively into, you do get more of what you're promised.
Because it's weird reading it, because you see like undercard matches on Raw and it'll be like, oh, here's, you know, Bob Holly versus Hakushi. Which actually that sounds all right.
Sounds all right.
But you'll see Nitro, and like you said, slapdash, but one of the matches might be, oh, here's Eddie Guerrero versus Brian Pillman. And
yeah.
Like, oh.
Well, the one that we're doing, because we're a few weeks behind on Nitro, but the one that we're doing, which you'll hear on Thursday, it is one of the matches just thrown in the middle is Chris Benoit versus Eddie Guerrero.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Just, you know, with a New Japan contingent watching ringside, one of those being Jushin Liger. And it's just like, while the commentators are going, well, Hulk Hogan is... shut up, talk about this. This is better.
Where are you building up to? Is this the year where Star Cage, New Japan versus WCW?
Yes, we're not there yet. We've got World War III to come next.
Oh, Christ.
Which I know WWF is concerned about.
Yeah.
Because they're like, it's like a big Royal Rumble.
Oh, it's a 60 man for
you. Don't like it. But what is happening in the wrestling world, Jack Atkins?
Well, before we get started with that, though, I wanted to point out a weird bit of serendipity.
Ooh.
So today is the day after Tom Campbell's birthday.
It is.
And the episode of Raw we're watching, Monday, November 20th, 1995. Was the day before my birthday.
Oh, no way.
November 21st, boys. So when I was looking at this morning, I was like, that's a nice little...
That's nice, that. Yeah. A little bit of serendipity.
Yeah.
That's how you pronounce it.
Has Vince McMahon been perverting the course of justice, though?
Of course he has. Right. Spoiler. Next question.
So from Ravy Dave, the Observer newsletter dated November 27th, the main story is something I had never heard before. And apparently the New York Post had reported that federal prosecutors were investigating whether there was witness tampering and obstructed justice in the steroid trial.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. The U.S. Justice Department's Brooklyn office is reported as investigating television producer Marty Bergman and his wife Laura Brevetti, who was the lead defense attorney in McMahon's trial. On the allegation that Bergman offered a key witness in the trial between $250,000 and $400,000, according to government documents. And I looked through it and it was lots of, you know, this and that, and because it was based on a report of a report kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought this is going to play out in the coming weeks, but I had a look online anyway. And David Bixenspan on Twitter has a big thread that covers the whole affair in more detail if you're interested.
Obviously, David Bix on Twitter. He's a good guy to follow, is Bix.
Yeah, he's very good. But if you just Google Marty Bergman, David Bixenspan, it should be the first link. We'll get some more snippets as this unfolds over the next few weeks. But it's, yeah, I'd never heard of this.
No, before. I hadn't heard of this either.
No.
I mean, I do wonder how, in a company that was so clearly full of steroids.
Yeah.
They weren't done for steroid abuse. And it was just like how suddenly the roster was shrinking before our very eyes.
Yeah.
During like whilst they were going, nothing's changed. We've never done anything wrong.
Yeah. The Ultimate Warrior's always been a small guy. He's not been killed and replaced like people think.
See, this he's just always been that small, you weirdo. But this is why, like, the MLW thing that's happened recently, where Major League Wrestling wanted to sue WWE for unfair monopolization rules. And I think I mentioned this in the podcast last week, but it's like they're doing that. And at the same time, WWE are going, nah, these claims are false. And in unrelated news, the Impact Knockouts champion will be in the Royal Rumble. Like, that's never happened before. And I love that it's happened. And I hope Mickie James made bank. And I'm sure she did. I got goosebumps listening to Hardcore Country and seeing the Impact Knockouts title in the Rumble.
Yeah.
One of the highlights of what was, let's all be honest, a bit of a shit Rumble this year. But I loved seeing that. But the back of my head, I feel like there's...
I hadn't even cottoned on to the fact that it could have been a way to bury bad news.
I'd like to think that's not the case.
No.
But there's a big part of me that thinks it might be the case.
I mean... Yeah, as we'll see in this episode, they're not the squeakiest of clean companies, WWF.
No!
Especially not.
But they're a family business!
But more on that later. as we saw at Survivor Series, which we watched so closely and attentively, and I wasn't having some kind of like fever dream on the couch.
You were just very sleepy, bless you.
Yeah, yeah.
You were fine though. I think we still put out a podcast better than some presenters would. Very awake.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of monster, Jesus Christ, went right through me.
Your worst day is better than someone else's best day.
Yeah, you hear that, someone else?
Not saying that was your worst day, by the way. I thought you were... That wasn't your worst day, by the way. I thought you were class as always, but yeah, I know you told me that you were very tired.
I'll give you that £10 later.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate.
So yeah, so we saw at Survivor Series that Mr. Perfect's back and his commentary was shite.
Oh, it was awful.
But apparently it appeared from television the next night that Perfect's role, at least to this point, will be doing the heel commentary on Superstars, leaving Jerry Lawler only for Raw.
I mean, cool. I mean, if you want to, I don't know whether they want to try Perfect in a more permanent role as a commentator. So maybe putting him on Superstars for now and keeping him away from Raw. I guess with Superstars, you can edit it better.
Is he with, I should have looked this up really. Was it Jim Ross Hellman Superstars?
Jim Ross.
So if you're going to learn off someone.
Yeah, and you're with, if you're sat with JR as well.
Yeah.
I think Sweet Stan Lane has come and gone now.
Oh, good old Stan Lane.
He was there as an example of somebody who was hired because they looked lovely in a suit. Yeah. And I realised there's a lot of wrestling, a lot of WWE hirings that come because do they look good in a suit? Would they stand out in an airport? That sort of thing, you know. I always feel like that's like why I was always bypassed for stuff, because I don't think I look that good in a suit. Not aesthetically pleasing enough in a suit.
Well, considering I always dress like I'm 14 years old, whenever I wear a suit, it looks like I'm on my way to court. So.
Oh, what crime did you do? You're about to tell me then. Wait, at least wait.
Perjury.
Perjury.
Yeah. So that's better than what I was going to say. Also at Survivor Series, but we didn't see this, kids. ECW's The Public Enemy had a dark match against the Smoking Guns.
That they did.
And in previous weeks on the podcast, we'd noted that they were umming and ahhing, WWF making a play for them, WCW making a play for them. I think the other week, some in the WWF locker room said, yeah, we've got no money and there's no house shows, so you might as well not come here.
If they were still running like B shows and C shows, then they would have maybe brought them in.
Yeah.
But because they're not.
Yeah. So from Dave, from what he was told, Public Enemy was still strongly leaning towards WCW and the final decision should be made this week. Paul Heyman was still trying to keep him with ECW, but was involved with putting the deal together for them to work the WWF show. But even Heyman was like, you didn't believe they were going to WWF. They would either go to WCW or stay with ECW. Although on ECW TV, they were winding down, did a few jobs. The crowd knew they were going, so we'll see them on Nitro soon, I imagine.
Yeah, well, not we are. I think it's just a couple of weeks, and then stick Sam and I on, and you'll hear us talking about them.
Yeah.
But the first major tag team jump in the Monday Night War,
the Public Enemy.
And you know, on the classic ECW Hardcore TV review that you do with Justin Henry, Sabu's back this week because obviously he had a very frayed relationship with Paul Heyman. He just basically one day just Sabu. Mm-hmm. One day he'd be in ECW, the other day he'd be appearing in New Japan and he'd be like, ah, nah, fuck it, I don't care, they're paying me more money. He was working some matches for WCW. I know he had a match against
So they we'll dig into this on the Nitro review as well with a few other bits and pieces, but his time in WCW was about to come to an end, or had already come to an end behind the scenes, because they just, like, he wasn't happy because he felt like he should be working higher up the card. They weren't happy because he was constantly going off piste and doing, like, obviously they always wanted to do table bits, but he was fighting apparently too much outside the ring.
Yeah.
And that is so, like, that is so rushed, like Nitro. The amount of times where Sabu's been doing some stuff on the outside of the ring and they cut back to the commentators and you just hear the carnage, but you don't see it because they're like, we've got to get to the next Hulk Hogan segment. And it's like, but I get why he was annoyed.
I do like that element of wrestling because it makes it feel like a living, breathing organism.
Yeah.
Not every week.
Nah, Nitro does feel like it's just carnage happening as it happens. Like, it's like Raw and, like, for lack of a better term, it feels more Raw than Raw does. Not always the best thing, though.
But the tidbit I got with this is Sabu's back with ECW, but WCW apparently at this time allowed wrestlers to work indies but not to work with enemies, WWF, ECW, or Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, because Smoky Mountain is WWF's feeder group. Yeah. So, of course, they're not going to work there. They'd be furious if they did.
Apparently, around this time, like you're saying, Sabu was a bit pissed off. WCW pissed off. Eric Bischoff wouldn't take Sabu's calls. So Sabu called the WCW hotline. And on there, he found out he was fired.
Oh, my God.
Basically. And then it gets more complicated. It'll involve the WWF, NWA. It'll involve Hakushi. And as I've got here, and many other cunts. So Sabu's just do whatever he wants, really.
Blimey, that's hilarious.
There's only two more, like, little bits. These are not really news, but just interesting. So in this week, New Japan had announced most of the lineup for the historic January 4th show at the Tokyo Dome, the biggest New Japan show in, you know, of the year. But what may be a harbinger of bad news for American wrestlers, there were 9 matches announced and there was no foreign wrestlers booked at all. And I looked back, and at Wrestling World 1996, the only gaijin would be Vader, which just shows that the business is in the shitter, that they're just like, there's no real American stars, so we'll just kind of have Vader. We'll do a bit with WCW, but no one will really care, so yeah, fuck off kind of thing. But also in Japan, this made me go, fuck it, hell, and I told Aiden, just a random 6-man in all Japan. Mitsuharu Misawa, Kenta Kobashi, and Jun Akiyama defeated Stan Hansen, Gary Albright, and Rob Van Dam.
What?
That sounds mint.
That sounds like an amazing night. Yeah. That sounds brilliant.
I was just flicking through. It's like, hang on, that sounds class. Yeah. So I'm going to have to try and find that one.
Oh, that sounds great fun.
And we bookend this with something which will, you know, play out in the next few weeks. Mm. At the November 17th ECW show, Shane Douglas was backstage.
Oh.
And we had said on Survivor Series, we thought that might be the last run of the game. Writing in this Observer, Dave Meltzer saying he believes the next In Your House will be his last WWF bout. And indeed, he will be gone January 1st.
Yeah, because there's a few bits that come from this set of tapings that is kind of sets up Dean Douglas's last bit of WWF work before he is away. But yeah, so I don't know whether you spotted this as well. There was some stuff about the Click from the Observer this week.
Yes.
Have you got that for later on?
I've got that for later on.
Brill. So we'll leave that and we'll come to that in a little bit. Just want to make sure that you've got it. We're good. So here we are for Monday Night Raw in Richmond, Virginia. We are at the Richmond Coliseum. This was kind of a home for WWF and WWE shows up until like 2018.
Yeah.
Like, they do Raws and SmackDowns from here on, the annual almost.
Well, just as soon as it opens, I was looking at it, I was like, that looks like a decent building. The other ones have looked a bit like, you know, empty local hockey arenas and just a bit empty and soulless.
Armories.
Yeah, and this has actually got like tiered seating, and I was like, right, this looks like Raw. Let's fucking go.
And it looked big, didn't it?
Yeah.
We'll be here for In Your House, Cold Day in Hell in 1997.
Okay.
For Armageddon in 2006 and Backlash in 2016.
Oh, very
so
nice.
They are residents of pretty much of the Richmond Coliseum in Richmond, Virginia. Mm. This is a tape. This is a live show and a tape show. And what they have decided to do is tape next week's Raw first.
Okay.
So again, that must be that. I guess it's for a multitude of reasons to keep maybe people giving the results guessing as to like what's going on where and how. I think also to not pagger the audience.
Yeah.
By if you're going to do a tape show after a live show, the audience are going to be knackered. I mean, they tried the other month doing it so they had like half of a tape show, then a live show, and then the other half of the tape show.
Yeah.
But this time they've just gone, we're going to tape, I think they pretty much tape all of Raw for 1 week before Raw this week. Well, and there's a couple of dark matches at the end.
Yeah.
Send the fans home happy.
Well, I saw a dark match beforehand that Matt Hardy beat Jason Arndt.
Yeah. Mm. So, I mean, I don't know whether this will be, maybe they're looking at using Matt Hardy more.
Yeah.
Potentially giving Jason Arndt a run out by that, because Matt Hardy's getting the W.
Yeah.
They might be thinking, okay, because he's been doing some stuff on Raws for a while, and he is a talent, and we'll see whether he does anything.
Who knows? But what you were saying about this live episode we're going to watch being kind of second in the tapings, that's surprising, because I thought the crowd did sound pretty up for it. So I assumed it was just like opening show, but it seems like it was a good audience, and they must be if they keep coming back till 2018.
Yeah, they're obviously a lively lot of Richmond. Yeah. We start off with a recap from Survivor Series. Vince McMahon calling the Diesel Heart match the greatest WWF Championship match of all time. What do you reckon? Hyperbole?
Yeah.
A little bit hyperbolic?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It was good.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah. We get stills of the match, and then the post-down beatdown by Diesel is very much the conversation piece here, which we'll leave until later on. More highlights from Survivor Series once we get underway, focusing on the antics of now naughty 1-2-3 Kid, and he's facing Hakushi in our opening match. Kid's out there with Ted DiBiase. Thought they might have given Kid some new music. Still feels very babyface-ish.
Yeah, I wish he would have had, you know, changed his look up a bit.
Yeah.
He's just still the 1-2-3 Kid, apart from now he's frowning. That's
pretty much all that's it. You could have given him darker ring attire, maybe.
Bit of gold in there.
Yeah. Given him Ted DiBiase's theme.
Yeah.
I feel like they did that with Tatanka, didn't they? They gave him he had like the yee at the start, and then it went into money, money, money.
Yeah.
You could have had 1-2-3, money, 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 money.
Yeah, because especially considering, like you said, 1-2-3 Kid starts with 1-2-3 and then piped in cheers.
Yeah.
So you'd cheer along with that, surely.
You would think to cheer along with it, but they don't. Crowd are chanting Razor before the first lockup, and Razor Ramon is live on the phone with Vince and Lawler. They keep this relatively short and sweet. A few times they've tried this phone gimmick and it burns them. It doesn't really scan as well, but like it was a couple of short lines and it was fine. Ramon says Kid was like his little brother, but he's moving on, and he says, quote, "I ain't no crybaby." And I'm emphasizing that with future knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jackins has it highlighted pen on his notes, put it's coming, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you don't know, then we won't burden you with knowledge on that particular one. You'll find out as we do. It's an alarming throw forward of things to come. Marty Jannetty attempts a run-in on Kid, but gets pulled away by officials to stop the run-in. Normally, in a wrestling match, somebody runs in, that's it, get in there, DQ. This time they stopped him.
Which is interesting, but, you know, it's just another long list in the Marty Jannetty Chronicles. It's like, oh my, he can't even run in.
He's not allowed to get a run in, I'm afraid. This is a great match between Hakushi and Kid. The end comes with DiBiase going for... end comes when Hakushi goes for a dive to the outside, not DiBiase, thankfully. Oh. Hakushi goes for a dive on the Kid on the outside of the ring. DiBiase throws him off the top, pushes him off the top rope and back into the ring. And Hakushi is prey for the spinning heel kick from 1-2-3 Kid for the 1-2-3. Post-match, Ted's having a chat ringside with Vince, crowing about how proud he is of 1-2-3 Kid's performance. They taunt Marty Jannetty some more. Jannetty walks out trying to get a piece of the Kid, but Sid steps in front and batters Jannetty, saying, if you want a piece of the Kid, you've got to go through me.
Yeah.
So Kid's got himself some beefy backup in Sid. at this point. What do we think of the opening match?
It's a good opener.
It's a good opener, isn't it?
Hakushi versus Sean Waltman's going to be good. But, like, what I've got here is, like, obviously this was setting up the kid. It, you know, no one believed Hakushi was going to win. But the post-match was effective. Fucking Sid gave Marty Jannetty a powerbomb onto the floor. I assume, I've not looked forward to the tapings or a later episode of Raw. I assume this is setting up a tag match. Kid Vicious versus Jannetty. And
I think it will, but I know that before this show started, little head up for next week, we get Jannetty versus Sid.
Ooh, okay.
So we may get a few more steps before we get there, but certainly this sets up a match that has already been taped for next week, which is Sid versus Jannetty.
But I mean, we've been saying when Jannetty had been wrestling, it's like Jannetty's a good worker. You know, obviously,
oh, yeah.
the kind of joke that his career kind of became often overshadows that. And we were kind of waiting for him to do something meaningful. And rather than him coming out of all the tassels, he's just here in black jeans, a black leather jacket, and a black t-shirt looking to kick someone's head in.
I quite liked it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's a good little look for him. Good look for him. We cut to Doc Hendricks in the Slam Jam Center in a lovely blue jumper and coked off his bin.
I've got this as well.
What, coked off his bin?
Well,
he's very lively and very sweaty.
He said last night he couldn't sleep, and I've put it's probably all the cocaine and wanking. But
it's all the wanking and cocaine. He bigs up how brilliant Survivor Series was. Says we don't have to wait long for another pay-per-view. December 17th in your house from Hershey Park, Pennsylvania. Main event is going to be Bret Hart versus British Bulldog for the WWF Championship. Yep. We're getting our boy in a big program.
Hey,
Hartman.
Brett, man, you bugger.
You bastard.
I'll pummel you.
Remember SummerSlam? They do throw back to SummerSlam 92, Bulldog pinning Brett in the main event, and then we get a Bulldog promo!
Yes, we fucking do.
With one long run-on sentence.
And shaky cam as well, 90 shaky cam.
I like the idea of Vince directing Bulldog here and going like, you can't flex your muscles enough. Like, because was that not one of the instructions Vince gave to Diesel when he was a bodyguard? Which is like, keep rubbing your hands. You can't rub your hands enough.
With the glove, yeah.
Yeah, like, keep doing that. And like, I'm sure like with Bulldog, it was just like, just keep showing your muscles, pal. In one long run-on sentence, Bulldog tells us he's going to... That was it. He says, I beat you at SummerSlam, and I'm coming to Hershey Park, the scum hole of the earth, to take the WWF title. Big kicking for Hershey Park, Pennsylvania. Very harsh. Bulldog gets us hyped. We go back to Hendricks, who announces we're also getting Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Henry Godwin in a hog pen match on the pay-per-view. As he's hyping up this match, Big Daddy Cool Diesel arrives in the building. And again, this is WWF do this, like, because even they do stuff like this on the taped shows. And they are also sort of seeing what WCW is doing and trying to present a product which nobody wants to switch off from.
Yeah.
I can imagine people would have probably tuned out during Doc talking.
Yeah.
So dropping in something like this, going, wait, Diesel's arriving. Oh, God, let's get to that in just a second. Let's quickly rattle through this. Like, it's enough to keep people there.
There's some bad acting from Doc Hendricks, though.
Oh, he's dreadful.
Diesel's here. Oh, Diesel's here. He's not got an earpiece or anything. we can't hear someone behind the camera going, Doc, Diesel's here.
So, just the voices in his head, isn't it? Yeah, just keeping him warm at night. They pushed WWF In Your House as a bargain, which is what these In Your House shows are all about. Like, they're shorter shows and they're cheaper. And this is WWF trying a new method of what will become known as premium live event. By just offering like pay-per-views every month, but doing them cheaper, which is
it makes sense.
I mean, it will change the state of play for wrestling in general.
Yeah,
because WCW will kick theirs up a notch to keep up with the Joneses. Because WCW ramped theirs up to like 10, and then WWF went, we'll do one every month, and then WCW will eventually go, all right, we'll do one every month too.
Yeah,
and then monthly pay views are here.
I like the way AEW have gone, where they're just kind of like, and I think NXT should follow this, where they're just like, right, we've got four pay-per-views a year, but at least once a month we'll get a big edition of Dynamite. I think NXT should do that. Like they have a couple of times with the New Year's Evil and the Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
Give people a reason to tune in.
I like that style. I do. Like, it makes the TV feel special, and then it makes when they're on pay-per-view feel even more special. I'm down for that. Up next, it's Skip taking on Savio Vega.
Fucking yeah.
Now, before the match starts, we see Diesel having a little chat very calmly to Shawn Michaels backstage. So it's kind of asking some questions about, like, cool, is he... So he's a baddie, but he's chatting to Shawn. Shawn a baddie too? We get another hype for the MSG show that is immediately followed by a show in Scranton. I talked about this last week. This is where we're at as a company. The match we're about to see is Milton Bradley Karate Fighters sponsored. So the sponsorship continues, which makes me think we should look into, now we're back together, we should look into getting some Milton Bradley Karate Fighters for the In Your House watch along.
I do have some that I'm watching on eBay.
Have you? Yeah. Cool. Let me know how much
we'll
that
go halves.
We'll go halves on it. That's cool. Before the match starts, Barry Dudinsky. He's flanked by two blonde models who look like they want to be anywhere but next to Barry Dudinsky.
Yeah.
They're modelling the Undertaker's denim jacket. It has Undertaker on the left and the WWF logo on the right. It is very cool.
Well, yeah, I've got... Kind of want one. I'd never fucking wear it, like, but I kind of want one.
But you just like coats and jackets and that sort of thing, so it's in your ballpark.
I did get a new jacket in the post yesterday.
How many do you have now?
Well, it's a mixture of light and heavy jackets, so,
Yeah. Eichmann Jackins.
Yeah.
He loves his jackets,
yeah,
doesn't he? Eichmann Jira.
Yeah, we've got the same hair.
You've got exactly the same hair. And sometimes you team with Kushida.
Yeah, definitely.
Savio and Skip eventually gets underway. I see a Body Donna's fan club sign in the crowd.
Yeah.
Nice to see.
Yeah.
Decent enough back and forth for what it was.
Yeah.
Just fine. Did all right. There was no ending because as they are getting into the swing of things, Big Daddy Cool Diesel walks out. And just
no more glove rubbing.
No more glove rubbing for our boy. Skip gets dumped at ringside, and Diesel just pie faces him to the floor.
Yeah,
and that's where they just kind of go, I think this match is finished now.
Yeah.
So shame for Savio and Skip, but again, they're keeping up with the Joneses.
Yes,
and they're doing what WCW does, that sort of feeling of anything can happen at any time.
Yeah.
So Diesel walking out during this is a cool little bit, I thought.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The match just stops. Diesel grabs the microphone, says he doesn't need to apologise for last night. He says for the first time in a year, he slept like a baby last night, had a smile on his face for the first time in a year this morning. He says he saw himself and not a corporate puppet that Vince McMahon created, saying that Vince McMahon missed the ball. And here is, I've written verbatim what he says here. He says, I won the WWF Championship a year ago. 24 hours later, I'm up in the Titan Towers with the suits and the merchandising team being told I need to smile more. I need to be politically correct and a little more corporate. What you saw last night was the tip of the iceberg. Big Daddy Cool is back. That same guy you saw in Providence at the Rumble a few years ago. The only thing that matters to me right now is my family, my friends. That includes you, Shawn Michaels. And I'm not saying I'm not going to smack hands, but it better have a black glove on as you got to be with me. Whether you love me or hate me, that's the way it's going to be. I'm back. This was great. Where was this, Diesel?
I've got written here, this wasn't Diesel, this was Kevin fucking Nash.
Yes! Imagine having the belt on this guy.
Yeah. And the
amazing!
And then as he walks off, he follows through, people are sticking out their hands.
He doesn't follow.
No, he doesn't shit himself.
He shits his pants.
Oh. he follows through on his promise. His hands reaching out for him, and he's like pushing them out of the way and seeing the ones wearing the diesel gloves, and he's only high-fiving them, and he's like pushing people out of the way. He's like, no, you support me, fucking get in.
That's a great way to sell some diesel gloves.
Oh yeah,
it's a brilliant way to sell some diesel gloves.
Better than Barry Dudinsky.
Yeah, I reckon he sold more diesel gloves that night than Dudinsky wearing an Undertaker jacket
too, right?
I thought this was great, and obviously you say this was
Kevin Nash.
This was real.
This is Kevin Nash. So, right, going back to the Observer, like you were saying about the bit about the click. Let's see if I've trimmed the same bits or if you've got a bit more of the fat.
Okay.
So, obviously with the title change of Survivor Series, it means the click aren't at the very top of the tree. Although Dave has wondered, only time will tell if this is temporary or not. This has also left the question, is he a heel or not? Because apparently he appeared to have been booed by 65 to 70% of the fans after the match. Against Bret Hart because he just went fucking mad. The new character and new attitude of the promotion was set up by Diesel mouthing motherfucker when he lost the title. So it appears that WWF believe the ECW approach, or at least a toned down version, is now the most marketable approach in the country. According to Dave, Diesel will still apparently also wrestle other babyfaces. And, you know, it goes over this amazing promo. And what's he put here? Faced with the conclusion, based on all available figures, that the direction WWF were going had run its course, and with the increasing popularity of UFC pay-per-view events that have surpassed WWF events, that WWF think it's time to take the big step and go in a rougher and more violent direction.
So that's Davey Meltzer
predicting the fucking hottest period in wrestling.
And he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
He is not wrong, because Nitro's leaning towards that.
Yeah.
It's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
But I think after a year of very homogenized attempts at revitalizing Hulkamania on both sides,
yes,
they've had to go, right, we've got to shake this up now.
But it's like you were saying, that Survivor Series felt like the end of the new generation period.
Mm.
And what we were saying when Goldust debuted, that for me, that's the start of the build towards the Attitude Era. So you've got Nash last night saying, motherfucker, and his promo then. You've got a couple of big stars who are going to debut in the next couple of months. You've had a table bump, but you have what happens at the end of Raw.
Mm.
We are hightailing it out of New Gen at this point.
We really, really are. Really excited to see what they do as well.
Yeah.
That's so good. It's so good. But yeah, there have been some changes like to the top of the tree. The click still trying to sink their fingers in though.
Yeah.
Should we dig into that a little later?
What have you got?
From the report that we received in the Observer, the click met with Vince McMahon on the road a few times.
I didn't see this bit, no.
One of the conversations regarded going through the roster person by person and evaluating whether they belonged or should be moved up or down. At the meeting, the guys the click wanted to see given bigger pushes, Skip was noted to be one of them. And there were people who they wanted to see useless and shouldn't be around, including people like Bob Backlund. Now, this conversation happened, and in the weeks to come, we will see Skip, who they want to see get pushed, get moved down and jobbed out.
Yeah.
And Backlund, who they wanted to see gone, get a mini push.
Do you think...
Weirdness.
Do you think a certain rabble of domino playing WI members ahead of this, and seeing as, you know, the click, they can politic, and you know they're gruff and tough men, but the Bone Street Crew, despite being lame, there's some fucking bruisers in there.
Yeah, they want to keep. I mean, a few they want to keep in their good books.
Mm.
I think. But saying that, one of the Bone Street Crew wasn't given much favour by the click. Some other names that were shot down by the click in this meeting with Vince was Karma, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Bob Holly.
See, I knew that Bam Bam had some run-ins with the click because obviously he's all but gone at this point, and he'll be moving on shortly. I don't know how I missed this. I did go back and forth through it.
That could potentially be from the next. Was it next week or the week before? Maybe.
Possibly. Yeah, okay.
Either way. We'll touch more on it in weeks to come because it's the power of the click.
What gives the fucking click the right to do this?
Strength in numbers.
But just to go up and say, right, these are good, these are shite, these are good, these are shite. It's like, Jesus Christ. It's not like...
I mean, let's... Come on. We've all had jobs where... Like I've had radio gigs where I've been out for drinks with management members and stuff. And after a couple of drinks, you are going, they're a bit of shit, aren't they? you just do. But the difference is we haven't got Dave Meltzer, like, floating around the bars that we go to.
There's a difference between going for a pint with members of management and kind of saying someone's shit to go into your boss and say, right, let's sit down. Let's get a list of everyone. And here's who we think should be fucked off.
But what's to say that this hasn't been interpreted that way? What if it was just like Kev and Sean and Scott and that having a chat with Vince, maybe at the gym or whatever, over a protein shake, I don't know, and just going, hey, man, fucking Bigelow shit. And he is, and they are. They're all right. And then somebody went, I can't believe they went for a drink with Vince and they said that these people were all shit. Maybe.
The stone's on the click as well, because we know that they can't fight. And two people that are deciding to get on the bad books are, you know, human mound of meat, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Bob Backlund, who would fucking eat them all.
Yes. But then I think the click know that with their powers combined, like if they all just went, see you later. Because we know that, you know, it goes without saying that WCW has already by this point, even if it's not been reported, WCW have just gone, hey, lads, what sort of money you on there?
Yeah.
You know that, like, the feelers have been put out in some way, shape, or form to go, hey, what are they paying you? It's tough business.
Do you want a favoured nations contract, Kat?
Yeah. Favoured nations of dominations. So I would, yeah, so they've got enough bargaining chips. So, like, if people do get annoyed with them, they'll just go, all right, these five pillars of the WWF, we're all going to go.
Yeah.
See you later.
But it is weird that it's kind of, you hear the click and you hear the Bone Street Crew. But nothing's ever said of the Hearts, because obviously they must have some influence if you've got Brett, Anno and Davey Boy at the very least.
I think
least.
They're too busy bickering amongst each other, to be honest, to really get their shit together. Because all the stories that you hear of the Hearts are like them trying to control Bruce. Of like he's a feral cat.
You know, everyone knows I'm the real star of the Hart family. Me, Bruce Hart.
That could have been any of them saying that.
Me, Ross Hart.
Me, Stu Hart.
Smith Hart. Me, Martha.
But that's, yeah, I think they're busy trying to get their own fucking house in order.
Yeah.
And they all want to be top. So, like, there isn't that solidarity. I might be wrong. If the Hart family are listening, I might be wrong, but I don't get that vibe of solidarity from the Harts that I do from the click and the WI that is the Bone Street, Bonesaw. Bonesaw's ready! The Bone Street crew.
Bonesaw's ready.
considering what, Bulldog was drinking a pint of Hobgoblin at the Syracuse incident, like, so.
Yeah. Well, that's it, yeah. How can he's out drinking with the click.
Yeah.
So they're very splintered. They can't get their shit together, I don't think.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
After a commercial for the Encore Survivor Series, we get an announcement that next week, Karma is facing The Undertaker for the remains of the urn. And this is a story from, like, SummerSlam that we've just decided we better tie a bow in this and get it done. And it was the coolest story. Like, I was a lapsed fan at this point, but I distinctly remember Sky one day showing a bit of the wrestling, and they showed a bit which had Karma stealing the urn and then melting it into chains.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's cool. I like that. They stole the urn and smelted it.
Well, fans of Cultaholics Top 10 lists on YouTube, I did a list recently, and even though I wrote it and I pitched it, I can't remember what the actual subject of it was. It was either 10 underrated gimmicks. No, it was 10.
Let's see if I can find it on our channel.
10 gimmicks from the past that could work today. And the reason I pitched this is because I wanted to put at number one was Karma the Supreme Fighting Machine, because I thought it was very ahead of its time. You've just got this fellow who turns up, he's like, I'm a trained fighter, I'm going to batter people. UFC is the most controversial thing going. And even in the kid-friendly, neon-soaked WWF, we've got someone who is an ultimate fighter. And
10 most legit tough guys?
No, that wasn't me.
It was actually one of the vids. Oh, no?
Was that
the vids? Okay.
Legit tough guys.
That 10 most legit tough guys ever?
No, that wasn't me, because
that one did 1.2 million. You'd be happy with that.
Oh, that's an old one. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because I didn't write that, because I just would have had Dan Severin 10 times. the man's violent.
10 most intense wrestlers?
That was an old one of mine.
10 wackiest WCW gimmicks. Whoa. 10 most violent wrestlers ever.
That was an old one of mine as well.
Ooh. 10 worst wrestler attires. No, it's not that one.
No.
Wrong person won. 10 WCW stars who should have been bigger. No.
I can't remember when it was. I think it was old gimmicks that could be redone today. Like make a difference. Oh. Fatu was on there because it was just like it's a hard line to toe. But basically, I just sat there and thought, I want to write about Karma.
It gives you an excuse to write about Karma.
Yeah.
10 current wrestlers who could pull off classic gimmicks. That one. Oh, 10 strangest WWE gimmicks. No, it's not that one.
Nope.
Gimmicks inspired by movies.
What was the 10 strangest one then?
10 greatest wrestling gimmicks.
Let's scroll on. What's that one?
10 strangest WWE gimmicks of the 90s, 7 months ago.
Okay. I didn't realize that was already a video because I'm currently writing that. So.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's good. Right.
Good to know. That worked out quite well.
Yeah. Okay. That's actually helped me out a lot. So that means I've got to find
10 failed wrestling gimmicks that would work today.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And the if you want to look for it online, the thumbnail is Mordecai and Sean O'Hare.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Sean O'Hare gimmick.
Great, wasn't it?
Well, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know.
Fuck yeah. And again, and it's proof that WWE have been consistently the way they are forever.
Yeah.
So super cool gimmick. Yeah. Hey, I'm just the little conscience in the back of your head. I ain't saying anything you don't already know. This is great, pal. Put it with Piper. Who's having the match at the pay-per-view? Piper. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for that, friend.
So Karma's coming back.
Karma's coming back, but it looks as if he's on the way.
Yeah.
This might be the last time we see Karma for a little while. He will be back as Karma.
He'll gain a surname, won't he?
He will indeed. Jones.
Karma Jones.
I'm Karma Jones. I'd like to join the WI.
well, Karma.
Hello.
We're not currently accepting new members because...
Oh, but there was a bit on the Facebook that said that you were.
Oh, well...
Your Facebook page says you were.
Well, make sure... Big Mark's just gone out for a leak. Okay. You can come in, but you can't say anything because his brother Glenn wants to come in, and we said,
"What's he doing here?
Oh shit! he's just dropping off.
He's not a member.
He's dropping off the Chaddy Bakewells we're having later.
Well, okay. Well, he's not allowed to stick around. He's not a member. I don't know why he's runs like as a brother.
Don't worry, Lenny Henry. He's on his way. We'll just have to give him the £2.25.
Can I be excused from next week's meeting because I've got the dentist?
Of course you can.
Thank you.
If you'd like, you can send someone in your place because we'll need
I'll send Glenn.
You'll send Glenn. Because as the sign on the wall says,
Everybody wants to be a cat. For those who listen and don't watch, we did this in the last one. The trick is to try and get to say something at the same time.
Yeah.
But by predicting what the other person says. Because as the sign says on the door, here comes more of your quite illegitimate troublemaking, you prick.
Flawless.
Okay, let's talk a bit more wrestling, sadly.
Well, I was going to say, talking of pricks, Brother Love's back. Brother Love's back next week, isn't he?
Yeah, Brother Love. So Brucey P's been backstage a little bit, so
yeah,
bring him out on telly to interview Bret the Hitman Hart.
I've always hated the Brother Love gimmick.
Have you really?
As a kid, it had go-away heat with me. If there was, when you're like 4 or 5 and you got a video and you're just like, yeah, you want to see fighting? It's like, why is this sweaty red man shouting for 15 fucking minutes?
They're long segments, aren't they? Yeah. The Brother Love ones.
So yeah, he's always had the go-away heat for me.
But I think at this point, they're just looking for stars from the glory days. Just to come back in and strengthen the numbers a little bit, even though they're new generation. Mr. Perfect,
yeah. But is anyone tuning in for Brother Love?
No. he's a name from the day.
Yeah, I suppose.
And he's backstage anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like when he turned up during that Money in the Bank at Titan Towers. Do you remember that one from 2020?
Oh, God, yeah.
And they had like John Laurinaitis go, people power.
Yeah, the mad one where you found out that Vince has got a big T-Rex on the wall.
That's the one. And, yeah. and Bruce Pritchard was there. It was just because who was knocking around the office that day.
Yeah.
There you go. We'll do Brother Love. Yeah. Just because. just for the kids. Main event o'clock. It is Owen Hart versus Shawn Michaels. We've been talking about this all night. An easy win, surely. A hot match between these two. They flawlessly together. And this is where WWF wins, where they just let people wrestle.
Yeah.
And they're, because, you know, they're great. During the match, Jerry Lawler talks about Tony Randall.
Oh, God. Fucking hell.
Marrying a 25-year-old woman. So
75-year-old Tony Randall.
That's the one, yeah. Yes. Marrying 25-year-old Heather Harlan.
Yeah.
An intern at one of the theatrical programs that he worked on. They got married on November the 17th, just a couple of days before this Raw. And they lived in a Manhattan apartment, bought a vacation home in Florida in 2003. They had two children, Julia and Jefferson, and remained married until Randall passed in May 2004. So it was a very, very happy marriage.
The thought of 75-year-old Tony Randall still having, you know, alive and kicking sperm is fantastic. But it was just Jerry Lawler saying, oh, he's my hero. Oh, you know, Tony Randall, old Tony Randall of a young bird. Oh, he's my hero. I was like, fuck off, Jerry.
Funny enough, 2000, was on the classic SmackDown review, we're into 2001. We're about to watch Jerry Lawler versus Steven Richards in the match that will lead to Lawler leaving the WWF because the cat would be fired.
Oh, shit.
His other half, the cat.
Is this the match where Jerry Lawler's not wearing a cup and let's just say he's not Davey Richards?
More on that No Way Out in a couple of weeks' time. There really is no way out. The match goes on. Michaels counters a superplex with a crossbody for a near fall. We see Lawler McMahon praising Shawn's resiliency.
Yeah.
This is they're very heavy on like how, what a guy, what an unstoppable force Shawn Michaels is. He's great. He goes to speech in music, pulls Owen back into the center of the ring before he does it, and Owen hits an enziguri and Michaels is out. And this is a very key moment in the rise of Shawn Michaels.
Oh God, yeah.
This enziguri. Because Owen goes to put the sharpshooter on. Michaels gets an eye poke, tries to get back into it, clotheslines Owen out of the ring, skins the cat as he does so, poses, gets the crowd G'd up, and then just hits the deck. Just absolutely stacks it in the middle of the ring. The crowd are cheering like crazy, and then they go quiet. And then the crowd just relatively silent. The commentators stop. Earl Hebner kicks Michael's leg.
He's fucking terrible referee, isn't he?
He's just that he is a shit ref. Just kicks his leg. Really odd. Owen is outside the ring getting fanned by Jim Cornette with his tennis racket.
Yeah.
And then gets into the ring and looks concerned. Did you hear a whistle blow?
I heard like a weird whistle go just before Vince got on commentary. I also heard during this match someone pulled out a trombone in the audience.
Yes!
And a flute. Did you hear the flute at the beginning? It sounded like...
I didn't hear the flute. I heard the trombone.
And the trombone kept going on, especially during this bit where it goes all solemn and just someone just keeps going...
Yeah, there's a trombone in the crowd. A whistle, a flute, and a trombone.
Yeah.
Commentators go silent. We come back from break and the medics are in the ring. They're giving Shawn Michaels oxygen. Vince McMahon is in the ring as well. And I put, somebody has a trombone in the crowd. They replay his fall. It all feels very, very real.
Yeah.
But I think by virtue of them replaying the fall, they're like, this is probably a story. They're cutting Shawn out of his wrist tape and his gloves. Vince and Lawler are now both off commentary and they're walking around looking very concerned. We come back from the break and we hear, Shawn, it's Pat. Shawn, it's Pat Patterson. Can you hear me? I was like, Pat's there. Shawn is starting to respond. We cut to some fans looking very upset as they help Shawn from the ring, try to help Shawn from the ring. And we're going off air with Shawn still receiving oxygen, medical personnel, Vince McMahon, Gorilla Monsoon, Pat Patterson, Wurzel, and J.J. Dillon. Wurzel's sighting here. All looking on with concern. What did you make of this?
Ooh, well,
really, it was very different.
I just put they wouldn't fucking dare do this today.
Oh, no.
They would not dare do this today. Yeah. It was a really good match. There were some weird bits with it, though. Like, did you notice before the enziguri spot by Owen, which looked and sounded like he properly clattered Shawn. Did you notice that Owen took the Brett turnbuckle bump and the turnbuckle pad itself flew off?
Oh, I didn't see that.
So knowing what was coming, I was thinking, all right, okay, so I take it Sean's going to smack his head into the exposed turnbuckle. And then, but no, I think that was an accident. So everything, I don't know. Again,
or was it a red herring?
Yeah, it could have been a red herring, or it could have, you know, added into the, oh, shit, this is a bit dangerous kind of thing of it. But good match. Really strange ending. Seven minutes, I think it was.
Basically, yeah, the last 7 minutes of Raw were people like buzzing around Shawn Michaels trying to bring him around. This is something they've teased at house shows, apparently. While Shawn has been competing at live events, like he's been spotted like looking woozy during the matches. And like, I think if you watch this one closely, there's probably a few points where you can probably think, actually, yeah, he's showing some signs here, because they're still doing the thing where he's recovering from Syracuse and continuing to wrestle through it. And then he just hits the deck.
I was going to say, there's a ton of notes on this from the Observer, but before I wade through that, what were your thoughts on the ending of this?
I thought it was, like, as you say, you could not do it now.
No.
Like, the world is so different now. But I thought it was jarring enough and it stood out. And I thought it was, for what it was, like, well put together.
Yeah.
Like, people who would have been watching it would have, I would have been glued to the television going, is Sean all right? Then, there's no way of knowing whether this is a story or not. I guess, like, you know, you've got your sensible head on, you go, well, if it's not a story, like if this is part of a storyline, they wouldn't show a replay.
Yeah.
So relief from that. They probably wouldn't keep the camera on him. They'd do us anything else.
Did cut to commentary saying, oh, well, yeah, we'll keep you updated.
Because we've been unfortunate enough to see this happen like in real time and how they really would deal with an incident in the ring. And it wouldn't be like this with the camera zoomed in very closely. But knowing where we're going, I think if there was any doubt about wanting to get over like the heart and the passion of Shawn Michaels, this whole thing will get everybody on side. I kind of thought, should Diesel have come out?
Well, he'd fucked off, hadn't he?
He did, you're right. Yeah. As soon as he did the promo, he went, didn't he? That's probably why.
Because he went backstage where Shawn Michaels was waiting, just kind of patted him on the back and buggered off. So
yeah, that was right. But yeah, for what it was, as dark as it was, I thought it was well put together, well executed.
So Ravy Dave and the Observer, I mean, strap in, folks, this is a chunk of text, but everything he writes is like, it gives a lot of background to this. So he called it WWF's most daring and in some eyes most galling angle in years. You know, playing on Syracuse. The angle was convincing enough that from their reports, the majority who attended the show live believed it wasn't an angle. Initially, those live believed it was an angle, but as it got played up stronger and carried on, most seemed to believe it was real. Most phone calls to Meltzer from people who viewed it on television knew it was an angle, but many didn't. And like you said, the giveaway was that they, you know, they put it on instant replay and it happened to come at the same time as Hogan versus Sting on Nitro. Most figured WWF were going to pull off something major to steal the spotlight. And most believed the majority of people watching on television would initially buy it. Apparently, though, the timing was seen as quite bad because the angle took place just a few hours after gold medal skater Sergei Grinkov dropped dead of an apparent heart attack out of nowhere.
Oh, geez.
During practice in Lake Placid, New York. And this was the same day, and I looked it up. He was 28 and had a massive heart attack.
God. So I didn't know that had happened at the same time.
Yeah, this was the lead story in the news as this angle was taking place.
Oh, Christ.
Meltzer was told the angle was planned well in advance, and with everyone so busy at TV all day, there is a chance that those in charge may not have even known that, you know, Grinkov had had a heart attack and died. Or that it would be the worst case possible to do an angle that would appear to many to be playing off it. And as we know about the WWF, like Eric Bischoff would say, controversy creates cash. We've seen it in not a different setting, but the weeks before with the is OJ Simpson guilty kind of thing.
Yeah.
People who called, some think the angle was positively brilliant. Some thought it was a little bit of both, you know, sensationalist and bad taste and brilliant. People who called the WWF offices the next day were assured that what they saw on television was totally real and was not part of the script.
Oh, dear.
And that Michaels was under doctor's care for post-concussion syndrome. Yeah.
What? I mean, you. Do you let them in on the thing?
Well, it's mad because, like, looking at it, like Meltzer says, they reckon the injuries from Syracuse were worse than they initially feared, but thought, fuck it, we can play this up. And again, Ravy Dave saying he guesses that they'd keep HBK out of the ring until the Royal Rumble, which they will. This is the last time we'll see Sean in action until the Rumble. When he's put... Originally, when this angle was first thought of, the idea was to involve someone like Jeff Jarrett, who wasn't at the show, have him attack Michaels. So it put the heat on someone. The feeling this would make it too obvious that it was just another wrestling angle. So they did want this to feel real. As far as taste goes, if WWF knew about Grinkov's heart attack and still did it, they are really sick. But this is a sick business and it wouldn't shock, you know, Meltzer either way. But what he's saying is, like, how many angles have been done in wrestling where the babyface is left for dead or blinded for life, etc.? But any defense for the angle being no different to what you see on any other television soap opera or drama or whatever. It was taken away by WWF itself by saying on the phone, no, Shawn Michaels is ill. He's fucked. So it's whether it's bad timing, whether it's them being fucking mean, whether it's
here's the thing is that I can both see them either being so busy at television and this being a very different world where you don't have access to like the internet all the time. You don't have access to news 24/7.
Yeah.
I could see it being a case of, oh, this was just missed off when everybody was just head down, cracking on with work. I could see this of them going, hearing about it and going, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
I can hear it being both.
Yeah.
With them. I really can. Like they've done stuff that is really grim in the past at awful times.
Yeah, because
I could see them doing it knowing.
I don't know what the landscape of broadcast news was in America at this time. I know CNN were the first to do 24-hour rolling news, and obviously Vince isn't going to watch fucking Turner.
No.
So if there were other rolling news channels at the time, any of our American friends who, you know, were keen on public affairs in 1995 can tell us. But like you said, that it wasn't the same culture. There wasn't phones. It was internet access on cell phones and Twitter. And
I can imagine the nature of WWF people not know. Because like you listen to like Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. And
yeah.
He will, even in this day and age of fast-moving news and access to everything, like he'll have his head up his ass with wrestling and won't know about other stuff happening in the greater world sometimes.
Yeah.
So I can that could have been the case.
Yeah.
I didn't know that though until you said it.
Yeah, that's
it does change my vibe a little bit on the angle.
Yeah. But viewed in isolation. What were your thoughts on Raw this week?
Wasn't really much of. I mean, it was a couple of really good wrestling matches that didn't really have finishes.
Yeah, like three match card and two matches and no contests.
Yeah, it sets the pace for the times to come.
Yeah,
and it is us heading away from the new generation era. I think Diesel's promo was absolutely a highlight.
Yeah,
the Shawn Michaels thing was certainly eye catching.
Yeah.
And again, like when you're up against a live Nitro, the idea of going quick put Raw on Shawn Michaels has collapsed.
Yeah.
Genius.
And as well, I've put here that you can see they're getting more of an edge. Mm. Every single segment had an edge to it. And they all had purpose and built storylines and did it well. And that's without Bret Hart or Undertaker.
Yes.
So for episode one, they're like, here's the first half of our main eventers. The second episode next week will be like, here's the second half of our main eventers. So if they play the cards right, they may be able to stretch this out better than some other, you know, episodes we watch where it's just like, here's Avatar against fucking Mantar or whatever. So
yeah, they're working smart with these tapings. So yeah, I mean, I'm very intrigued to see what comes ahead. I know there's still a little bit of new generation bollocks to come. We haven't had Santa Claus yet. More on that soon, you suckers!
Well, when I was writing the 10 weirdest gimmicks of the 90s without realizing that we'd already done it before, I'd just written up all of my Santa Claus. Yeah.
Any other stuff you're working on that you want to plug?
I don't fucking know now. I'd just done the weirdest stars of the 80s, but I'm going to have to go and check to make sure we haven't done this
before. I can check for you
now. Yeah, thank you. And if we haven't done it, the weirdest gimmicks of the 2000s and maybe the 2010s. But again, we'll have to...
I don't think we've got one of the 80s. No.
Yeah, because it was harder doing the WWF ones of the 80s because what is... weird at the time, spoiler alert, like number 10's Junkyard Dog, which isn't that weird of a gimmick, but it wasn't until the 90s that the WF went berserk. And when you think of Junkyard Dog, even though it was a Mid-South gimmick and it was massive, but to a WWF hardcore audience in 1984, when you got this man running around on all fours, headbutting people and pretending to be a dog, when the year before you had Bob Backlund tying people up in knots,
yes,
it must have been like the switch from NXT to NXT 2.0.
That's a really good shout. That's a really good shout. And that's probably what it was.
Yeah. So I've basically put that in there saying, yeah, Junkyard Dog's a legend. It's not a weird gimmick. But considering the kind of stony-faced early 80s of WWF.
He stuck out on that one.
Yeah.
So possibly a list like that coming soon. Possibly. It doesn't look like it's been done before. Right. So you might get away with it.
Deep dive this afternoon.
Fingers crossed that should be a thing that happens. Brand new episode of Desert Island Graps. By now you will have hopefully heard Al Snow.
Yeah.
Who was on last week. Always nice to chat to Al Snow. Did we talk about Avatar? We'll find out. Again, not recorded it at time of recording. We'll see how we go. Brand new Nitro review, brand new SmackDown review, all that good stuff heading into the week ahead. And until we are next together, he is at Brat Atkins on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. And as it says on the sign, here comes Mr. Rogers with his fine selection of rattlesnakes, cakes, bakes, and drakes. They are ducks.
Ducks,
you prick. Love you, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.